Penguin Random House Audio presents Once Persuaded, Twice Shy, A Modern Reimagining of Persuasion by Melody Edwards, read for you by Rachel Perry. Dear listener, her convenience was always to give way. She was only Anne. That dismissive "only Anne" is the way we're introduced to heroine Anne Elliot in the 1817 novel Persuasion. And it's how Anne's family and much of the book's cast treat her, like forgettable wallpaper. Quite a discouraging opening for one of Jane Austen's most intelligent and sophisticated heroines. But when I reread the novel for the umpteenth time, planning for this reimagining, I looked past the compliant, suppressed, old before her time Anne, to the incredibly competent woman underneath. In the original novel, it's Anne who actually draws up what would be an effective budget in response to her family's debt. Anne who tends to the servants and tenants on the Kellynch estate before leaving. Anne who looks after her injured nephew and sends for the doctor. Anne, who diplomatically soothes the grievances of Mary and others. And Anne, who triages, acts, and directs everyone when they are frozen in the critical moments after Louisa Musgrove's accident. No one so proper, so capable as Anne, is what Captain Wentworth says by the time we are halfway through the novel. And that is perhaps the most accurate assessment of our heroine. It was this version of Anne that I wanted to bring forward in my novel. This version of Anne that could avail herself of the opportunities afforded to a modern woman and emerge as Anne Elliot, executive director of the Elysium Theater Festival, town counselor, mentor, and boss. She is powerful. And yet still powerless, because despite all this, she retains that fatal flaw. She is defined and valued only by her ability to be of use to others, now as burdened by her professional responsibilities as by her familial ones. What does it look like to get out from under that mantle of responsibility? How can she retain the work and the relationships worth saving, while taking back some of her control, choices, and boundaries? These are the issues I wanted to explore in writing Once Persuaded, Twice Shy, issues that are as relevant to women now as they were in the 19th century, along with questions like, was Anne right to turn down Wentworth the first time and let them both grow up? How can you balance the heart and the head in evaluating a relationship? Can anyone really understand a relationship from the outside enough to give life-altering advice? And, perhaps most critically for all us Austenites, which film adaptation of Persuasion is the best? What proved more difficult to translate to modern times was the choreography of this romance. How could I keep Wentworth and Anne always in close proximity, but still divided? How could I translate Wentworth's little acts of quiet care and empathy from the original novel, placing Anne in a carriage, rescuing her from a misbehaving nephew, supporting her leadership after the accident, into modern parlance? Without the constraints of the Regency era, how does a romance plot function when your two leads can barely make eye contact, let alone talk to each other? So I threw in a pumpkin festival, a Taylor Swift playlist, a mad assistant, an even madder goose, and just about anything else I could think of to keep Anne and Wentworth dancing around the point until, finally, Anne Elliot gets her long-deserved happy ending. Listener, I hope you enjoy. Melody Edwards. P.S. My vote for the best movie adaptation is the ITV 2007 version, in case anyone was wondering. P.P.S. My production editor, in reviewing this manuscript, has made an excellent counterargument, which is Kieran Hines. 1. She should have kept her flats on. Anne had made a hard rule for herself several years ago, when she thought striding around in her high heels would give her authority, and also maybe calf definition. It didn't either. It gave her aching feet and ruined her designer pumps. Louboutins should never be treated like that. So she made a rule. Flat shoes during the day, when she needed to get from her office to the box office to backstage to the lobby in a hurry. Flat shoes in the evening, right before the performance, when the whirlwind of last-minute panics, missing props, drunk VIP guests, and ancient ushers losing their hearing aids down a seat back kept her running. And only after that, maybe sometime around the third act, would she nip back to her office, touch up her makeup, slip into her cocktail dress, and swap her flats for heels. Then she'd be poised and ready in the lobby by last curtain call, ready to greet patrons and ready to make her speech as executive director of the Elysium Theater Festival, while champagne flutes circulated. This evening she had been lulled into a false sense of security. Everything had been running so smoothly. And now, and she really could not believe she was dealing with this shit, she was walk-running from her office to backstage, her narrow-skirted dress and high heels cutting short each stride, while her assistant, Emmy, rushed along beside her, talking a mile a minute, trying to explain why their lead actress was suddenly convinced her dressing room was haunted, barely breaking a sweat in her ballet flats. Smart girl. And then, after last night's ghost tour, they took her to the Angel Inn for lunch, and you know how they like to take tourists down into the cellar and show them the original old beams with the musket ball scars, and talk about the ghost of Captain Butler who died there? And after that, they took her to Fort George, where they were doing historical battle reenactments for the afternoon. Anne grimaced. Two reports of upset school trips at the fort, and now this. No one freaks out when they go to Colonial Williamsburg. Why can't we make that our model? The town of Niagara-on-the-Lake, of which the Elysium Theater Festival was the centerpiece, sat wedged between the shores of Lake Ontario and the mouth of the Niagara River, and downstream from the famous Niagara Falls. Its character was a confusing mix of year-round small-town life and seasonal leisure playground. It boasted several spas, a golf course, boutique shopping, romantic hotels, and endless hectares of surrounding wineries. It was also home to multi-generational farmers and small business owners, a tractor festival, a beloved main street preserved from the last century, and miles of hiking trails frequented by the locals. It had been an early site for European pioneers settling in the New World, and had many confusing remnants from its journey through the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, not cleared away as they are in modern cities, but still standing as the local pub or courthouse or military graveyard. The town was nestled up as close as possible to the American border and had been the site of the infamous and bloody War of 1812, both Fort Niagara on the American side and Fort George on the Canadian side, once manned by the British, still stood. Stone and wood and grass edifices forever peering tiredly across the river at their old adversaries. That the Historical Society wanted to use this living history to enliven the town was commendable. That they were terrifying tourists and visiting actors was less than lovely. It was just like their idea 2 years ago. Equally ill-conceived, in Anne's opinion, to reintroduce Canadian geese to the pond in the theater gardens. And now they had that one lunatic goose who kept dive-bombing the glass theater doors like it was his primordial purpose. He'd managed to get in once, squawked straight for the bar, and ended up flapping around madly with a martini shaker stuck on his head, so that Emmy named him Double O Goose. The Historical Society was mysteriously absent when Anne had called them to come deal with that situation. She smothered her frustration with them now. Make a note for tomorrow. Call Professor Davis at the Historical Society and tell him his ass is fired and he'll never work in this town again, Emmy cut in with relish. Absolutely do not do that. We are not firing anybody. She enjoyed mentoring Emmy, truly, but the girl's bloodlust was beyond comprehension. What were they doing in business school these days? Just watching House of Cards on a...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?